My name is Ben Greenfield, and on this episode of the Ben Greenfield Life Podcast.
Obviously, when I started my journey, I knew nothing at all. I didn't know what was the right way or form to exercise. And I think I got sucked into this hard charging. If I was running, I should be running as fast as I could. But I think in the last 1 year, this notion of homeostasis or balance, finding that optimum level, is one huge learning I've had, which for many people, just walking. Like most people are not fit enough to even walk.
Fitness, nutrition, biohacking, longevity, life optimization, spirituality, and a whole lot more. Welcome to the Ben Greenfield Life Show. Are you ready to hack your life? Let's do this. I'm wearing a patch right now. It's like I'm getting an NAD IV, but it's going straight in through my skin. It's called Ion Layer. It's an NAD patch. A lot of people got to hunt down a doctor and needles and go through this kind of like painful drip to get an IV. Instead, Ion Layer uses medical grade iontophoresis. It's a transdermal patch to deliver NAD straight into your bloodstream, even better absorption than oral delivery. Every Ion Layer kit you get straight to your house has 6 treatments of 500 milligrams of pure NAD for a total of 3,000 milligrams of NAD each month. I wear it on planes. I wear it when I travel. I wear it when I'm a little bit beat up or sleep deprived and I need extra NAD. They've even partnered with certified physicians and pharmacies to make the whole process seamless. You fill out an intake form, the kit gets shipped straight to your door, and they're going to give all my listeners $100 off your first order. Go to IonLayer, IonLayer.com, and use code BEN to claim that $100 discount. Oh, yeah. Enjoy. Okay, I've talked about these products that I really like that come from bees. It's called Beekeepers Naturals. They have like a throat spray. They have propolis, vitamin D, and zinc-based products for the immune system. They have wonderful tasting honey. They have bee pollen. But my favorite lately, don't laugh, is I've been jamming on their lollipops. They're these kids' propolis throat-soothing lollipops that I stole from my own kids. It's propolis, vitamin D, zinc, and wildflower honey. It's like a guilt-free candy. They got 50% less sugar than normal lollipops, and they're just incredible. I've actually been sucking on them when I play pickleball and tennis. I don't know why I like to have some in my mouth when I'm playing those sports. But anyways, these lollipops are so good. If you order anything, just grab some lollipops. You'll see what I mean. So anyways, Beekeepers Naturals is going to give all of my listeners 20% off of anything, including the lollipops. When you go to beekeepersnaturals.com/Ben, that's beekeepersnaturals.com/Ben, or enter code Ben. That'll be 20% off of anything from Beekeepers Naturals. Try the lollipops. Sheila Jeet. It's fun to say. It's actually a funny biohacking video going around the internet right now where they're making fun of Sheila Jeet. But did you know Sheila Jeet is actually a conqueror of weaknesses or destroyer of weaknesses or climber of mountains? I don't know. They got some crazy phrase for it in Russian lore. But man, it is a potent adaptogenic fuel and it tastes like crap. It really does. But the good folks at Organifi, fortunately, have cracked the code on making it taste amazing with these gummies that I'm addicted to. I've been eating the morning, afternoon, evening because it's an adaptogen. It doesn't even keep you awake at night. It supports gut health, nourishes the digestive tract, supports detoxification, enhances energy levels, has anti-inflammatory properties. They source theirs at Organifi directly from the Himalayas, home of the world's finest Sheila Jeet, heavily tested for heavy metals, and it's incredible. If you want to try this stuff out at a 20% discount, go to Organifi.com/Ben. That's Organifi with an I.com/Ben. Get 20% off of your order of these Organifi Sheila Jeet gummies.
Well, folks, it's actually quite late for my podcast guest today over in India. What time is it over there, Ritesh?
It's almost like 12:15.
Man, so just so everyone listening in knows, that's kind of a big deal because when I was in India on this last kind of like speaking and biohacking tour that I did, we went to some parties and there was like me and one other guy who were leaving the party at like 9:30 to go get our beauty sleep, our beauty biohacking sleep bed, and that was me and Ritesh. So I connected with And Ritesh, I always second guess myself as I'm saying your name. It's Ritesh Bari, is that correct?
Yeah. So I mean, if you wanted to make it easier for yourself, you could say Ritesh.
Ritesh. Okay. Ritesh. Yeah. Ritesh Bari. Yeah. That is actually a lot easier to say.
Easier.
So Ritesh and I connected at a talk that I gave over in India in Kolkata, He, amongst a lot of the people who I had a chance to meet in India, is a guy who really walks the walk and talks the talk. As a matter of fact, he handed me a book that he wrote about his incredible health transformation and his journey as far as kind of like defying the status quo of the way that food and lifestyle and, you know, as the case is right now, sleep is kind of practiced in India. And he even told me during conversation, it's a lot different than some of the ancient ways. And I want to delve into that and also some of the incredible information in Ritesh's book, The Amazing Health Transformation. So Ritesh is a fourth generation entrepreneur. He's the founder of a company called Breathe Again, which is a global platform that helps people to learn to live a long and healthy life. And I'll let him tell you his story, but over the past 8 years, he's really transformed his body and his life. He's lean, he's mean, he's fit. Ritesh, welcome to the show, man.
Sure. So really excited to be here. You know, like I've said to you in person, you're literally one of those people I've learned a lot from. I'd say like 70% of what I've learned over the last 10 years has come from reading your book. So this is indeed an honor. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, thank you. I'm honored as well that somebody out there is reading it, besides my mom, of course. So, sure. You know, you have a picture in your book. And, you know, when I was over in India, you know, again, we face the same problem in America, right? Like obesity, chronic disease, diabetes, cancer at earlier and earlier ages. And I don't think that India is doing much better, at least that was my impression when I was there. The photo you have in your book, you kind of look like, you know, a typical Indian man, I would say, looks these days. And I'm curious what brought you to that point, and then what kind of turned the light on for you as far as taking a different direction?
Sure. So I'd go back to the time maybe when I was 15. I moved cities. So I went to study in the city of Bombay. And I think that was literally the starting point of what ultimately ended up being like a 25-year journey towards essentially degeneration. My body was sort of falling apart. In that period, I put on, I'd say, 30 kilos. I also started my journey as an entrepreneur. And I think the combination of maybe the lifestyle and this, you know, seductive sort of view that, look, you're aging, you're getting older, and obviously you're going to put on weight. Aches and pains are part of like being an entrepreneur. I think that sort of led me to this notion that that was okay. And the fact that I was not well, I was diabetic, I was hypertensive, et cetera, was kind of the price I was paying, if you will, for being an entrepreneur. So there was this heady mix of like lack of knowledge and the fact that progressively I was just getting worse and worse, and I needed to normalize that for myself. I think that's kind of what led me to be like a very unfit 40-year-old Indian man, which is unfortunately what is, I think, happening to a lot of us now.
As an entrepreneur, were you actually in a sector like health or food where you were able to take some of the knowledge you already had in business and apply that to your life, or were you in a totally different sector?
Sure. So here's the really interesting thing. I used to make cement, and it was literally by karma that I met this person, actually in the US, San Francisco. To give you a backstory, I'm someone who's almost died 14 times in my life. And this event where I met Ravi.
So you've almost died 14 times in your life?
Yeah. It's a true story. So I've been in multiple car accidents. I've been in an airplane crash. I've been lost in a jungle with my younger brother where we were like kept for like 3 days. So yeah, I've lived an interesting life in many ways. And I think this one was like my 14th near-death experience. I was actually on my way to essentially being very unwell and very unfit. And it was karma that took me to meet this guy in the US. My sister was unwell. I traveled to be with her. And it was a chance meeting with this guy. And he just started giving me like factual information about what was happening in my body. That sort of led me to this transition. At that point in time, I knew nothing, like literally nothing. When he told me I was type 2 diabetic, I asked him, how many types are there? Like literally, that was how ignorant I was about health.
By the way, was this guy a doctor?
So again, really strange, right? He was a professor of environmental science. It's just that he had had a hard incident in his life, and that led him to sort of start learning and understanding about health. And it was that literally 1 hour conversation that completely changed my life.
So did you actually at that point start this business that you have now called Breathe Again, or did that evolve as you started to adjust your own life?
Yes. So like literally, I had no clue about anything health. I first fixed myself. And to the horror of my entire family, started doing things that they thought were really absurd, like cutting down how much I ate, right? So like you earn and you live to eat. And so I was like reducing the quantities of food I was eating. But then I think when they started seeing transformation in me, I think first few people I fixed were mom and dad, my wife, the friends and, you know, friends I knew. I think it took me like maybe 3 or 4 years to figure out there was actually an opportunity here. It was kind of embarrassing in the beginning, right? I came from the cement manufacturing background. Here I was like helping people fix like their nutrition. But I think gradually I realized that the opportunity was really vast. And more importantly, I think that the world really needed a fix. Because I think too many people were getting sucked into like these quick fixes. They were working for a while and then essentially like helping them bounce back. So I think that fact that we were effective led me to believe that there was a business. And that's how I started Breathe Again with my wife.
Okay. Now it may seem like kind of a weird place to start, but I mean, even the name of your company, Breathe Again, makes me think about this. You know, I've seen a lot of data about toxin accumulation, toxin exposure, metals, environmental pollutants, plastics, et cetera, and a pretty significant correlation between that and the rise in obesity and chronic disease. Obviously, it's no secret that India is polluted. You know, when I was over there, I even got sick a few times, just like, especially in Delhi, you know, walking around without a mask. And I believe the air hazard index was above 500, like shockingly high. Like I would get out of the cab and walk through a parking lot and be coughing by the time I was indoors. I wound up actually relegating myself primarily to like hanging out in malls where there were giant HEPA air filters for me to make my calls and walk around, and, you know, spent a lot of time indoors, which for me was a little difficult, you know, being an outdoors natural guy. But, you know, this issue with pollution seems like it's such a problem that I'd love to ask you a little bit about that. Like, you live there, you know, and obviously you're not in a, I would say, as heavily polluted an area, at least based on my subjective experience when I was there. But what do you do? What do you advise people do to manage the ongoing effects of something like that?
So it's a great question. I think it's a massive problem in India. Like, I'm someone who's actually lived through it. There was a point in time when literally if I went down to my building and the car wasn't waiting, like that 1 minute exposure would make me sick. And that sick would last like 10 days. It wasn't like something like you said, you just coughed. I could fall sick for 10 days with that 1 minute exposure. So what's interesting is perhaps the fact that I'm someone who now does not fall sick. So essentially, I boosted my immunity by eating balanced foods, essentially making sure I get both my macro and micronutrients. And so my immunity in some sense is better. And so that's just, you know, useful information for anyone who's suffering from the pollution in India. Indians tend to also eat a bunch of things that are actually helpful to them. So turmeric is something that's very integral to our food. Jaggery, interestingly, is very integral to our food.
Isn't jaggery like sugar?
It is. But it has, studies have shown that it actually has a carbon capturing effect.
So when interesting. You consume
So
you could probably throw in the same category something like maybe blackstrap molasses or a good raw honey or something like that.
Exactly. Okay. So used wisely, it actually has a beneficial effect. Obviously, there is no such thing as, anything in excess is bad for you. But if used wisely, jaggery is actually quite effective. We used to run cement factories. And our workers would actually consume jaggery because they were subjected to dust and pollution. So the use of ghee, turmeric, and jaggery, I think does mitigate this problem to some extent. But like Indians are just suffering.
By the way, I learned in a recent podcast that when it comes to carbon capturing, this new compound that a lot of people in the biohacking industry are using that has some good data behind it for longevity, but it's also a really potent antioxidant, is C60, carbon 60. It's actually pretty incredible. I don't know if the podcast I did on it will have come out. It probably will have by the time this podcast gets released, but I'll link to it. And by the way, for people who want the show notes for this podcast, they're at bengreenfieldlife.com/Ritesh, R-I-T-E-S-H, bengreenfieldlife.com/Ritesh, based on Ritesh's first name, of course. Now, when I was in, I believe I was in Bangalore, I met with a naturopathic physician, and I asked her the same question about pollution, Ritesh. She was a big fan of nebulizing a hydrogen peroxide saline solution, or even nebulizing glutathione. I know some people who even, and I actually did this when I got back from India for healing lung tissue. I even nebulized a vial of exosomes. What about the use of something like a nebulizer or even an oil diffuser? Have you ever messed around with anything like that?
Sure. So I have tried a couple of these, which actually brings me to an interesting, let's say, sort of crossroad that India finds itself in. I think we're dealing with a massive sort of health crisis, frankly. I think if you look at statistics, they say 50 to 60% of Indians are either pre-diabetic or diabetic. Obviously, weight's a massive problem. I play a game. Every time I take a flight, I try and sit in the front and then count the number of people who are overweight. I always end up crossing like 70, 80%. So it clearly tells me at least the flying class in India is clearly unwell and unfit. So I think we have a whole bunch of problems in India, pollution being one of them. What I think happens in India is that we tend to go more traditional. So let's say if there was a choice between using aerosol and using, let's say, turmeric, I think most Indians would just want to consume the turmeric and, you know, then pray and hope that things work out. I think the future is towards the direction that you're talking about, which is, let's say, IV, which is nebulizers, which is things like that. I think that whole stack is kind of getting built in India, but I still think there's a leaning towards just going traditional, which is consuming natural foods, maybe exercise, things like that. I think that's kind of where India's at right now.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And it's kind of related to that, the thing that you told me that I brought up earlier in the introduction. That's this idea of kind of like the way things maybe used to be in India from a medical standpoint. Of course, if I say that in the US, people will say, well, what do you mean? Like they, you know, they use leeches and they cut off body parts and gave people surgery without anesthetic. And like old medicine was kind of, you know, effed up, for lack of a better phrase. But when it comes to India, what exactly do you mean when you think about the idea of straying from some ancestral patterns and the impact that's had?
So I think India has this very rich tradition of both naturopathy and Ayurveda. I've actually looked at this a lot myself. And while I don't necessarily agree with every single thing that Ayurveda says, it's deep science. I don't think this is just, you know, someone sort of cooking up stuff. I think the wisdom in Ayurveda is not widely available. I think a lot of people have come in and sort of started to pretend like they know Ayurveda. But if you find the right practitioner of Ayurveda, they can cure you of pretty much anything. It's traditional use of herbs, traditional use of spices, traditional use of foods, traditional use of things like massages, which can like literally heal almost anything at all. So I think the science is there. I think the number of practitioners are not so widely available. I also think they have a communication problem. So they communicate in very traditional language, which for people like us who, you know, studied in the US, been around the world, I kind of get lost in their language very quickly. But I think there's deep science.
When you say lost in the language, what do you mean?
So, you know, the minute, like, I'll use three terms, Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. Right, these are three types of bodies that the minute you say that, because it's not normal language for me, I'm already lost, right? I'm not sure what you're saying. I don't understand what that means. I don't really know what type I am, et cetera, et cetera. I think that language is just not so commonly available. And so it doesn't sound like scientific enough almost to me. I know it's silly. But I think the ability for the Ayurvedic practitioners to communicate this better is a huge opportunity. I think the younger lot that are coming up, they're building the apps, they're building the language, they're building the tools. And I think in the next 10 years, we'll see an explosion of Ayurveda all over the world.
Yeah, that's interesting, actually. You know, it's kind of like, you know, the old Roger Williams book on biochemical individuality, you know, the different shapes and sizes of the pancreas and the stomach and the liver and different excretion rates for things like uric acid and vitamin D. And I think when you pair something like that with something very similar to like an epidemiological body measurement, like you have the mesomorph, the ectomorph, the endomorph.
Exactly.
That's more like the Western version of the Vita. Yeah. What is it? The Vita?
Kapha, Pitta.
Kapha, Pitta. Yeah, believe it or not, I have actually done some interviews on Ayurvedic medicine. I just don't have the the terms I'll memorize. But it's this idea of personalization of your lifestyle, your diet, your supplementation, and your exercise routine to your body type and biochemistry. Do you personally do that, like any level of customization or self-quantification?
So I track, I'd say, like 70 parameters almost every day, like including things like blood pressure, blood sugar, pulse rate, HRV, what else can I think of? My sleep, obviously, number of steps I take, time I exercise, heart rate, breath. So I do random tests where I count like how many times I'm breathing per minute, just to see like my sort of parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system. So a whole bunch of things. I'm crazy about tracking.
Are you using a specific app or platform or wearable or set of wearables for that?
The thing that really works for me is the Garmin. So that's what I've been using a lot. I find that works really well for me.
Which model is the Garmin?
So this is the 5. I just, in fact, bought the 7 today. But I found this to be really effective across multiple sort of disciplines. So I cycle, I walk, I run, I swim, I hike. I've just found it to be very effective. It tracks my sleep really well. So that's something I've used as my standard. I have looked at the other ones. So I played with the Whoop, I played with the Aura. I put it on, I put it off. But what I find works really well for me is all that data actually feeds into our Breathe Again app. So I get like one single stream, what we call a live stream almost. So what happens to me through the day, both in terms of nutrition, exercise, a lot of the meditations I do. So again, very interesting concept to use. I break my day into 6-hour windows. And so from the time I wake up, it's just 4 a.m., 6 hours into that day. I break it with like a 5-minute meditation, which is actually delivered to me on my app. And then again, 6 hours from that, I break it again with a 5-minute meditation. I just find that transition to be amazing for me. It just sort of calms my body down, slows me down, allows me to breathe slowly. It's a conscious effort to sort of bring calm and peace into my body.
So the alarm goes off, you know, let's say that first 6-hour phase. What does the meditation look like? You know, I'm assuming you're in the middle of something and notification pops up.
Right. So what I do are mostly like breathing exercises, the equivalent of what you'd call box breathing. That's kind of what I'm doing both times. What I've done is I've also paired it with a song. And again, because it's our app, I can custom build these things for myself. But I actually train my body to respond positively to a song. And so I just hear that song over and over again. And I've actually trained my body that when I listen to that song, I just calm down. My body calms down. So that mix between slow breathing and that specific song works really well.
For the song, are you uploading that to the actual app so it's auto-playing, or do you go grab that off of Spotify or something like that?
So we've got an API now into Spotify. So the song plays, the breathing happens, and that's it. I'm good.
Are these songs like with lyrics, instrumental tracks, or all of the above?
It's a really good question. I'm happy to share my song. It's called the Claire de Lune. It's obviously a classical piece.
Claire de Lune?
Yeah.
Okay. Unless you want to pull it up right now and play like the first 30 seconds or whatever, I can also link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, so probably easier to link it.
Okay. I'll link it out. So obviously the diet is really interesting too. Like you and I went out to eat, I think the first night I was there, and had to navigate a menu in which, kind of similar to the US, right? A lot of seed oils, a lot of suspect ingredients in terms of the sourcing of the plant matter, you know, organic, non-organic, et cetera. Less of an issue with meat just because a plant-based diet, I believe, is 80% plus of the population over there. But I'm curious how you navigate the dietary component in India. And I'd also just love to hear your overall perspective on what I've talked about in the past, which is my feeling that seed oil consumption, increase of seed oils, replacement of traditional oils like ghee, coconut oil, and olive oil with, you know, canola oil, safflower oil, and the like, is actually more responsible for the onset of insulin resistance than carbohydrate consumption, which really hasn't gone up at a very significant level in correlation to the rise in chronic disease compared to seed oil consumption.
No, sure, absolutely. So again, I can tell you from personal anecdote, about 30 years ago, dad came home And he said, throughout all the ghee, we're now switching to these industrial oils. And I think we can clearly see the transition from then as a family. I think India has gone through pretty much the same change. I think, in fact, the consumption of carbohydrates has gone down because almost every single person I meet now is apparently gluten intolerant. And so I've completely gotten off every single millet, every single grain you can think of. And yet are actually overweight, insulin resistant, type 2 diabetic, and worse. So I think definitely there are other factors at play. I think lifestyle is also one important factor here. While it's easy to pin this purely on the industrial oils, or the seed oils, I think the lifestyle has also changed. We just have become a lot less active. Like, again, from personal anecdote, I'd walk to school every day. It was like 4K in, 4K back. I'd come on play for like 3-4 hours. I can't imagine my son walking anywhere now. So I think the fact that we're less active also plays a role. But seed oil has definitely been a massive problem in India. We've thrown away what was traditionally really good, you know, sort of cooking medium. Ghee, sesame oil, mustard oil. I don't know if you tried mustard oil.
I did.
It's unbelievably good for you.
It is good. And I looked at the profile of it because I did some grocery store videos over there. The level of potentially inflammatory fatty acids is like 5 to 10% lower than canola oil. And it has a decent smoke point. So yeah, I don't do a lot with mustard oil over here. But yeah, it's a good option, especially in India.
Sure. So like ghee, by far the best, right? 250 degree smoking point. It's a very stable fat. And so, you know, you can deep fry, you can cook, you can stir fry, you can do pretty much anything. I'd say 90% of our food is now made in ghee, including pasta. We actually make our pasta in ghee.
You mean 90% of your food, not 90% of the food in India?
Yeah, just the food that we make at home. I think in India, it would be 10%. It would be exactly the reverse.
Something I was wondering when I was asking when I'd go out to restaurants for my food to be prepared in ghee is something that I'm aware of over here. Like if I'm at a restaurant and I ask for olive oil instead of, say, canola oil, you still don't know the quality of the olive oil you're getting, the sourcing of it, how much it's been adulterated or watered down, et cetera. With ghee, is it similar? Like does the source or the composition or the way that the ghee is made matter? Or is there something to look for or ask for when it comes to ghee?
No, absolutely. So what we consume is something called Bilona ghee.
How is that spelled? Bilona?
B-I-L-O-N-A.
Okay.
It's a specific type of ghee where actually it's hand-churned over 48 hours by combining yogurt and fat.
Who hand-churns it?
So there are people in villages who do this. That's okay. Where we source our ghee from. And from the little bit I've learned, that's the only actual version of ghee you should be having. I would be surprised if you found that in any restaurant.
Now, why is that? Is that because that particular process results in a higher smoke point? Does it have less fillers in it? Or do you know why that particular, you know, hand churning process, which sounds like it's might be difficult to scale, but is interesting? Is there something that's special about it from a biochemical composition standpoint, or something other?
So one of the, I think, beneficial effects is when you combine the yogurt, you also get a little bit of the probiotic in the yogurt, the lactobacillus. That transfers into the ghee. And I believe that's actually what makes the ghee really useful for you. Clearly, you can't scale this, which is why it's not as popular as maybe perhaps the other versions of ghee. It's just pure fat.
Yeah, you'd think that if you did want to scale it, there'd be a way to replicate that hand churning with some type of a factory
machines
setting.
Or something. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. So it's bologna ghee. But if you go to a restaurant and you ask for bologna ghee in India, are they going to have it?
Unlikely.
How much worse is regular ghee, do you think?
So I think what ends up happening in commercial ghee is mixing, adulteration, if you will. So the ghee that you get is not then strictly ghee. I think it gets blended with other things, much like olive oil globally. Like the olive oil you get in most countries now is the blend of olive oil.
Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use this special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just 3 times a week, You can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. Carolbike.com. Oh, man, I was telling a story on a podcast recently about how a lot of times after I've worked out and had a meal, sometimes my blood sugar drops. And I solved that with drinkable ketones. I had 3 shots of drinkable ketones yesterday during this long party and feast and open house. And I was literally like chewing gum, drinking sparkling water and drinking ketones, and the cookies, the dark chocolate covered almonds, the scones, the biscotti, the sugar infused juices. None of that was appealing to me at all because my appetite was satiated. Well, ketones have anti-inflammatory benefits, age extending benefits. They satiate the appetite, like I mentioned, for hours and hours on end with barely any calories at all. They're like a fourth macronutrient in addition to fat, proteins, and carbs, but they're a magical one because they do so much for the body. Well, Ketone IQ has worked with top Olympic athletes like Des Linden to Michael Andrews to Ironman world champion Sam Laidlaw. They just launched a supplement and research partnership with Team Visma Lease, which is a top pro cycling team that won the last 2 Tour de Frances in 2023 and 2022 and swept all 3 Grand Tours this past year. The top Tour de France athletes and even military organizations have been using this stuff for super soldiers and super athletes, but now you can get it for a very good price. 30% off your first subscription order of Ketone IQ. This stuff is called Ketone IQ, clean shot of energy with no sugar or caffeine. If you want to experience drinkable ketones and everything I'm talking about for yourself, go to hvmn.com/BenG. That's hvmn.com/BenG.
If you were eating out at a restaurant, what other oils could you ask for if it wasn't ghee?
So you could ask for mustard oil, especially where I am at, Calcutta. Mustard oil is very popular. That's, I think, commonly available, much cheaper, actually, frankly. You could ask for coconut oil. That's also widely available. Again, much cheaper. So those two oils would be available. I think they aren't as bad for you.
Yeah, that is interesting, your comment about how you can't necessarily tie everything to the advent of seed oils. You particularly noted the post-industrial sedentary lifestyle. And obviously that's pretty prudent because by the nature of the way the seed oils are extracted, a certain amount of industrialization is necessary. And so the rise in seed oils and the rise in a post-industrial relatively sedentary lifestyle is kind of logical that those two would go hand in hand. So yeah, it's difficult to isolate all the variables. And then even your comment about, you know, everybody being gluten intolerant these days. Well, even though I think in most cases, people who have issues with wheat, really, and I just know this from having tested a lot of people with a Zumer test or a Cyrex panel, they're not truly gluten intolerant or possessing a gliadin sensitivity. Instead, they tend to be FODMAP intolerant, you know, fructans, oligosaccharides, monosaccharides, disaccharides, and polyols, you know, garlic, onions, apples, wheat, etc. And it's interesting because FODMAP sensitivity tends to be something that arises in response to stress and low stomach acid production brought on by being in and eating in a sympathetically driven state. And so, you know, some people are like, oh, it's just more people are aware of gluten intolerance, as sexy to be gluten intolerant. But I actually think that people these days possess a gut that's far more sensitive, particularly to FODMAPs, less gluten, but FODMAPs. And since wheat is a FODMAP, many people think it's gluten intolerance, but really it's a FODMAP sensitivity brought on by living in a stressed out state.
No, I couldn't agree more. And if you just think about the kinds of stress that we go through in our modern society, think of the amount you're being stimulated on an everyday basis, from your phone to your email to your computer to your work to, you know, just travel, commute, you name it, right? And then if all else fails, then you come home and watch television. And that's like overstimulating you all the time. So I think just the amount of stimulation that we go through in our everyday life, and the fact that we are disconnected from society, which I think is a very integral part of de-stressing yourself when you have deep bonds and connections, I think you just feel less stressed. I think all of that, the lifestyle that we're living now, is causing immense stress in the body. Obviously, the first place it'll show up is your gut, and then the rest of your body.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, you just need to set an alarm to meditate every 6 hours. That's a, actually is a good tip. So, yeah. So the plant-based diet, you know, which I mentioned earlier, that's obviously very popular. I'm often asked this by folks, and of course, you've had to navigate this, I know. Protein acquisition and adequate amino acid intake on a plant-based diet. Do you eat a plant-based diet? And if so, how are you getting adequate protein?
In fact, we're one of those who are even more tending towards the plant. I mean, we're not vegan, but so for example, I don't eat eggs. And so therefore, all my protein has to necessarily come only from milk. So we do something called cottage cheese, paneer. That's fairly common. We also do a lot of lentils. We also do garbanzo beans. These are traditionally good sources of protein. They're not as bioavailable as perhaps, you know, meat would
be. Unless you sprout them, unless you sprout them.
Correct. Exactly. So we do sprouting as well. We do eat a lot of nuts and seeds. That also gives us a little bit of protein. In my case, because I'm working out, I've ended up having to supplement with whey. It's not my ideal source of protein. I would have much rather have gone like whole food. Anything processed is in that sense than processed. To get like, so 120 grams of protein per day. I've had no other choice but to do whey. But if you're not like very seriously working out, you're looking at like 70, 80 grams of protein a day, which is what most people I think in India at least need. I think that you can do with a vegetarian diet.
Yeah, one gram per pound of lean body mass. It's easier to attain on an animal-based diet, but some of those sources you recommended are good. Paneer, by the way, is fantastic. That was probably one of my favorite dishes when I was over there. Way different than just like the cottage cheese out of a plastic container in the U.S. It's like this little you know, edible squares, and they're typically in some kind of a sauce or a curry. And yeah, paneer is fantastic. Well, but the interesting thing about the protein, I don't know if you're aware of this, but if you take a plant-based protein like rice or pea, for example, this is a research study that came up, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, pretty good study, showed that by consuming a digestive enzyme that contains proteases or, you know, proteolytic enzymes or something that'll break down protein, you can increase the bioavailability of a plant-based protein powder up to that amino acid score of whey if you co-consume digestive enzymes. That could be as simple as just like literally putting a handful into the smoothie jar, you know, if you're making a smoothie or something like that.
Right. So traditionally what we've done is combine foods. So when you combine, let's say, rajma, beans, and rice, that in some sense completes the profile of the protein, makes it a little more bioavailable. So traditional foods have had like these hacks in some sense. But yeah, it's a great tip that you're giving.
Have amino acids caught on over there? You know, I ask selfishly enough because like the key on amino acids, those are vegan. A ton of plant-based dieters are, you know, throwing back like 30 to 40 grams of that a day for building muscle faster. You know, and so I'm curious about amino acids. Are those a thing in India? Are those caught on?
So I'll give you an analogy and then I'll answer your question. Like every time I go to work out in the gym in a hotel, I'm the only Indian. Everyone else is like traveling from somewhere else, some other country. So I think that gives you an indication of the fact that Indians today are just not that active. It's that active bunch that is then looking for the aminos at this juncture. So I think it's too small a market at this juncture. But I think COVID taught India a lot. I think as a function of that, I think the awareness, the willingness to do you know, something about your health has shifted dramatically. So 10 years from now, if you're asking me this question, I think there'll be a whole bunch of people in India. Today, I still think it's a very small market.
What do you say to someone who you're talking to over there about fitness and they say, I walk and I do yoga, I'm good?
Yeah, no, so I think yoga is wonderful. I think yoga is also misunderstood. Because I think the way yoga has been sold globally, it largely boils down to breathing and a little bit of stretching. Actually, yoga is a much deeper science than that. It has like very, very strenuous exercises. If done well, it gives you a complete sort of exercise. Like the Surya Namaskar, for example, which is a complete like downward dog and so on and so forth. That's a complete exercise by itself. They do 108. They would stretch it would stretch any fit person even. Traditionally, I think it's a lot more than what is sort of commonly understood. Personally, I do a mix. So I cycle, I strength train. I also do stretching. I do plyometric. So in my opinion, I think a blend of different exercises is good for you. Yoga done traditionally, I think is wonderful.
Yeah, I interviewed a guy named Dean. I think his last name is Coleman or something like that, who'd written a book about yoga for strength. And I kept his book in the sauna, and it's some very long, deep isometric holds. Typically,
exactly.
When the joints, let's say like the leg in a lunge pattern is at 90 degrees, or you're in an isometric squat or a bridge pose, and it can be very demanding. I don't think a lot of people get quite to that level with yoga. Hot yoga, very similar for cardiovascular endurance, can be fantastic. And then, you know, even like these, I don't know if you've seen the Tibetan longevity exercises before. There's five of them. I do them a lot when I travel. And for example, one is just the traditional like bridging exercise. Or the yoga, I believe it's the Chaturanga series, right? Where you go to down dog, down to plank, up to kind of a cobra stretch, back to down dog. But you're doing like 21 to 42 reps. You know, it takes 20 minutes to go through these five exercises. And you're kind of gassed when you're finished. But it just goes to show that it kind of depends on the volume. And also, I think the volume, the condition, right, like cold or heat, and then also the length of time spent in an isometric contraction that could make yoga strengthening or just kind of like an easy passive stretch.
Exactly. So if you think of the concept of time under tension, like I think yoga forces you to spend a lot more time under tension than does a traditional, let's say, bicep curl or whatever you want. Unless you then specifically slow it down.
Right. Or you have one of those fancy like isometric training machines that holds you in a specific position. So you know, we haven't really talked about it that much, but I know that of course spiritual care and spirituality is widely emphasized in India, and also something you talk about in your own book. You've mentioned to me a couple of times kind of like the potential conflict between longevity and spirituality, you know, where it's my understanding that spirituality in India is to kind of find salvation or escape the cycle of life and death. But then longevity is about extending life. You know, you look at the extreme biohacker transhumanist, and it's all about almost like this mad dash, nearly frantic and stressed effort to hold at bay anything at all that would threaten to shorten life. And that could even include staying out past your bedtime with your family or going, you know, spearfishing with sharks or something, just because, you know, life extension at all costs is the holy grail. So I'm curious your take on that, spirituality versus longevity.
Well, I think the question that we first perhaps need to ask is, are we looking at immortality or are we looking at longevity? I think somehow when you talk about longevity, it tends to start becoming about immortality, like I'm not going to die ever. I'm not sure that's necessarily a goal or even a good one. I think, you know, it's yin and yang, right? You need life and death. You need balance in the world. So I think if you're talking about longevity and not immortality, I think longevity in itself is a noble goal, simply because lots of people are dying for reasons that, you know, could perhaps be prevented. By itself, that's, I think, a good thing. I think what happens in India is our goal is, in some sense, to attain salvation, which is escape the cycle of, you know, sort of life and death. And if that were your objective, then you don't really need that much time. I mean, 30 years, 40 years, I think you should have figured out how to escape the cycle of life and death, and done whatever you needed to do to escape that cycle of life and death. And if you haven't by then perhaps you're not going to ever. So yeah, I think there is this inherent conflict. I think I'm one of those people who do believe, and increasingly so. My own journey has been someone who was an atheist, who then became spiritual. And I think today I'm at this point in time where I'm deeply religious. Like I believe in the fact that there's a God. I believe in the fact that, you know, my actions itself do not lead to outcome all the time. I think there is a divine power that sort of shepherds my life in a certain direction. And so I'm tending more towards like, I need to attain salvation. And if I can get a couple of more decades in while I make that effort, that probably would be a good thing.
It's happening. The Health Optimization Summit, one of the top biohacking, nutrition, longevity, fitness, functional, and preventative medicine events on the planet, bar none. I will be there in London, UK, June 15th through the 16th, 2024. You can get in, you can check it out at bengreenfieldlife.com/HOS24. That's bengreenfieldlife.com/HOS24, where you'll get access to VIP tickets, floor tickets, one of the world's biggest expos to try all the latest, greatest high-tech health gadgets, all of health and longevity's best-kept secrets in one weekend with great parties at a great venue. It's time for a life-changing time in London. I'll be there. JJ Virgin, Dr. Stephen Gundry, Dr. Josh Axe, Mike Mutzel, my friend and biohacker Tim Gray, and a whole host of other VIP speakers, and you can be a VIP as well. So it's the London Health Optimization Summit, June 15th and the 16th, 2024, coming up. Get your tickets at bengreenfieldlife.com/HOS24.
Yeah, my take on it is a little bit similar to yours. You know, for me, with a Christian background, as a Christian, I in no way believe that immortality or like transhumanistic, you know, life extension by freezing your body and implanting a new brain and consciousness or anything like that is something that is achievable, nor something we should spend a lot of time pursuing, because it's basically assuming that in the end we can play God. And if that's the case, then we don't need God. We don't need salvation. And so for me, it's more about equipping myself to be in as healthy a position as I can to be able to maximize my impact for achieving my life's purpose. And that would include, you know, let's say you have found salvation. Well, what if you gave yourself via the process of healthy living or even biohacking or life extension strategies an extra 20 or 30 years to not only be able to enjoy and love people and love God and enjoy this planet, but also to spread that message of the salvation that you've found to other people? Or like in 30 years, you could potentially, you know, let's say you do believe in immortality through salvation and your spiritual walk or connection with God, then, you know, potentially, if you do a good job over 30 years, you might take an extra 30 people along with you into that immortality, you know?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And like, I'll give you a really interesting analogy. The Buddha actually apparently lived till he was 82. And obviously, he was spreading his word till his last breath. So yeah, absolutely. If the fact that he had longevity, if you will, and lived till 82, he was able to spread the word. And, you know, there's so many people who follow his path. I'm one of those who was inclined towards Buddhism in a very deep way. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I have nothing against longevity.
Yeah. Yeah. I think immortality is achieved through having offspring who live after you and continue your legacy. Do you have kids?
Yeah, we have two. So I have a 10-year-old and a 5-year-old daughter.
If you were to sit your kids down and tell them what you know about achieving a healthy life, would there be certain pillars you would focus on? Right? Like I was hearing someone yesterday say that basically oxygenation and electricity are the two pillars to focus on for health. I've heard other people say, you know, whatever, it's sleep, stress, movement, diet, etc. For you, what would the pillars be?
So I think there are a bunch. Obviously, you know, I think the your body's electricity, it's energy in that sense. Obviously, oxygen is the fuel for the body. But I think to make it more simple, maybe in a way, for the masses to sort of follow, I think you need to focus on nutrition. You need to focus on exercise, movement. You need to focus on your sleep. You know, growing up, I thought sleep was for lazy people. So I think sleep is really important. I think breath is really important. I think meditation is really important. Meditation for me is the power of micro-trauma. So sort of like exposing myself to little small bits of trauma such that I can forgive and forget and move on. So I think that meditative practice is really important to me. Toxicity is really important to me, especially because of the environment we live in. Like you said in the beginning, think of the exposure to microplastic. And I think the data that's coming out now about just the quantum of exposure and what it's actually doing to our bodies, they're finding it now is connected to cardiac arrest. Like they're finding microplastics even in your blood. And so I think toxicity is really important. So yes, of course, electricity and oxygen, But I think for more sort of people who aren't really immersed in the world of health and wellness, I think you need to make this a little more simple to follow. And therefore, I think these six are really important.
Okay, so the six again are?
Nutrition, exercise, sleep, breathing, meditation, and toxicity.
Okay, got it. Are you doing anything on a regular basis for the toxicity component? Like, do you actually have regularly scheduled detoxification protocols or enemas, sauna, ozone, anything like that?
So I try and do as many different things as I can. So we spend a lot of time in the sauna. We do ozone. That's, again, something we expose ourselves to. We even do simple things like wash fruits and vegetables. So we use vinegar to wash our fruits and vegetables. That, unfortunately, all our food is not organic. So that just takes away some of the pesticide.
Yeah. Vinegar, by the way, I'm glad you brought that up. I wish more people knew about that cheap hack for, produce that has pesticides and herbicides, at least on the surface.
Exactly. So we actually wash and scrub as much as we can, as much as practical. I just find that to be a really simple, easy, way to sort of clean up the food. We use a lot of herbs and spices, very common in India. And then we find that as being something that really helps. We also do ghee chelation. So the protocol is actually to do 2, 4, 6, 8 spoons of ghee over a 4-day period. Ghee is a wonderful chelating agent. It takes away even heavy metals like mercury, lead from your body, especially your digestive system. So we do a whole bunch of things. I wish I could do more, honestly. The one thing I have done is cut plastic completely. So I try very hard to make sure that there's no plastic anywhere in my environment.
Now, you also mentioned sleep as a pillar. Right now, I think it's midnight or after there. What time is it?
Just close to 2, I think.
Okay, so close to 2. So knowing what you know about sleep, you're obviously out past your bedtime. What are some of the ways that you pull the trigger on sleep, particularly if you're out late, exposed to light, et cetera?
So one of the things that I've been blessed with is good sleep. And so if I actually went to sleep now, I would sleep. My only challenge is actually waking up early. So you know how you get a rush of cortisol early in the morning. I delay that gratification as much as I can. I try and get in that little extra hour. But otherwise, fortunately, I'm really good on sleep. I've never had a problem with sleep.
If you like that extra hour, I'm on this kick right now where I usually naturally awake around 4:45 or 5. I've been staying in bed an extra 20 or 30 minutes. I have this thing called a Sensate. Have you seen it?
Yeah. I've heard of it. It's really good.
Yeah, a little vibrating. It's like the size of one of those old computer mouses. It ties to these audio tracks that are engineered to sync to the vibrations of this device. It's usually placed right over your collarbone. My wife feels like it makes too much noise, but I found that if I put a pillow on top of my chest, it kind of muffles the noise, and I'm the only person that feels the vibration. I will lay there in almost like a trance-like state. There's something I think about the theta brainwave production that's occurring in those wee hours of the morning that just make it super relaxing. I'm just about addicted to that thing. I have a little red light that I keep by the bedside. I put it under my low back, lay back on top of it, put that Sensate on, and it's kind of like hitting the snooze button every morning for about 20 to 30 minutes. And then if you don't have one of those, you've seen the Apollo before, right, Ritesh?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, the Apollo Neuro, it's usually one of the wrist or the ankle. I can get a similar sensation by playing a really relaxing soundtrack or like white noise from a YouTube track that I've got downloaded to my phone. And I'll play this in airplane mode and put the Apollo right over my chest with a pillow on top of my chest to hold that on if I don't want to fuss around with or don't have the Sensate or left it in the basement or whatever. And this idea of haptic sensations, vibratory sensations to relax the body, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
It's
a really good tip. It's something we'll try.
Yeah. Do you have any other devices that you kind of use or like on a regular basis, besides, of course, your Breathe Again app that you're talking about?
So like I said, I try and keep it simple. I've played with a whole bunch of them. Eventually, I just went down to using my Garmin. I found that to be the thing that told me the truth. Told me how I did on an everyday basis, told me whether I slept well, did I exercise regularly or not. And so actually, I've just boiled this down to the Garmin now.
Got it. So with the Breathe Again, I also wanted to ask you, guys are making food products. You gave me
yes,
one.
We are.
It was fantastic. Yeah. I haven't been able to find anything like it. I gave it to a few other people when I was in India. I gave them a little square of this box that you gave me. What the heck was that? Because it was incredible.
So it's actually just natural nut seeds, a little bit of ghee. and a little bit of date. That's it. It's completely natural. It has a short shelf life. So we make it in small batches. And that's why I suppose it can never really scale. But yeah, that's it. It's just dates, it's nuts, it's seeds, and a little bit of ghee.
Yeah, it was incredible. Somebody sent me a couple boxes when I got back from India of a dessert that looked very similar. And I looked at the label. It's a bunch of fillers and preservatives and not exactly. Even jaggery, a bunch of cane sugar and then some pistachios and almonds. You know, it tastes good, but that stuff you're making is incredible. Are you guys making other products as well at Breathe Again besides the app and this? What's the name of this dessert, sure. By the way?
Yeah, so we called it the 5 p.m. snack.
The 5 p.m. snack.
Because that was the time. That's when you feel hungry.
Yeah.
And so we used it as a filler at that point in time. We have in total about 40 products that we do. But the ones that I think I'm really fond of are saffron. So we do saffron from Kashmir. It's called Mogra saffron. It's by far the best saffron you can get. The Bilona ghee is really popular. Obviously, we do jaggery. We do a form of jaggery that's granulated. Again, really good quality. We do a bunch of teas. We do a bunch of coffee. There's this particular coffee that you get in South India. It's grown at 6,000 feet. Araku, it's called. That's a coffee that we're selling. There's no pesticide use, simply because of the elevation. That's the coffee I drink every day.
Do you guys ship to the U.S.?
We want to start. So actually, that's one of the things I want to do. So I have two goals. One is to bring you to India more often. And the second is actually to send my products to the U.S.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, just send a semi-truck full of stuff to my garage. I'll just start shipping it out to people. The saffron's interesting. I haven't talked about it a lot, but it's a very beneficial, I don't know, what would you call it, a spice or an herb?
Yeah, so it's a spice. It's amazing for the nervous system. It's an amazing agent to calm you down, actually.
Yeah, it's actually in some stress control formulas now that I've seen, and that's my understanding exactly. Of it as well. Kind of similar like Tulsi or Astragalus or Ashwagandha exactly. In that respect. I actually wish that more nootropics companies would have a formula that allows you to kind of bring yourself back down or stabilize yourself if you've, you know, taken too much of a certain smart drug or nootropic, and saffron certainly fits in that category. I guess Bioptimizers, you know, they have the company Nootopia. I like their nootropics, and they have a product called Stress Guardian, which I think is kind of similar. Qualia, they make the product Mind.
Sure.
Yeah. They have one called Resilience, which is kind of like that, but I'm always, you know, I always have something on hand in the pantry. Should I get myself a little bit too amped up on caffeine or something like that? And I haven't done a whole lot with saffron. You ever put it in coffee just to kind of like counteract some of the caffeine effects of coffee?
You will not believe, but that's exactly how I use my saffron.
Really? Okay. Yeah. How important is it to select your saffron from a certain source? Do you look for anything in particular?
Yeah. So every single product that we have, we actually went to the source. Because it's very easy to get misled, to actually have like adulterated versions of the same product. So we went to the village literally where the saffron was grown. We went to the village where the ghee was made. We went to the village where the coffee was grown. And then we sort of developed a relationship with them just to make sure that the quality was always standard.
Okay, got it. I'm going to grab a little bit and try putting it in my morning coffee. How's it taste?
It's amazing. I'm like addicted to it now. Yeah.
Have you ever used rosemary in coffee? Apparently, the rosmarinic acid will amplify.
I have.
So, well, specifically for memory, kind of like bacopa, but that's something I've done before, is rosemary sprigs in the coffee. As far as certain things that you've picked up or learned over the past year or so, I know you've got your finger on the pulse of the industry. Is there anything that you learned and applied recently that are big standouts, big wins for you, especially from a health standpoint?
Sure. So I think in the last 1 year, one of my biggest evolutions actually has been in this in the field of exercise. Obviously, when I started my journey, I knew nothing at all. I didn't know what was the right way or form to exercise. And I think I got sucked into this hard charging, you know, kill yourself every single day, otherwise you're not really exercising kind of mode, where if I was running, I should be running as fast as I could. If I was doing exercise, all I should be doing is HIIT. If I was strength training, if I wasn't lifting heavier and heavier and heavier every day, then I was kind of like killing myself, not doing the right things. But I think in the last 1 year, this notion of homeostasis or balance, I've now started to apply to my exercise as well. And now when I'm reading more about it, once I've understood it, I think unless there's a goal. So if I want to compete in the Olympics, sure, I need to like push myself really hard. But otherwise, for the most average person, I think finding a balance between what you can do and what you need to do, I think finding that optimum level is one huge learning I've had in the last 1 year, which for many people, just walking. Like most people are not fit enough to even walk. So try and run in that position, you're just going to end up hurting yourself, damaging muscle, damaging tissue. So I think that's really been one of my biggest learnings in the last 1 year. Just sort of slow down even, if you will.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people who like to move their bodies and use the gym or movement as a way to stay sane, it's just important to have what I call, this is actually what I call with my clients when I'm programming their week of training, their parasympathetic menu, where certain days are recovery, but your options are sauna, hot, cold contrast, PEMF, oxygenation, breath work, walking, yoga. So you have this whole menu where you're not going nuts because you can't go to the gym. Because you can feel just as good sitting on your butt in the sauna doing 30 minutes of breath work, jumping into cold plunge and doing 10 minutes of yoga to finish up and warm up. And you know, I think it's a matter of a lot of people just needing to know what to do on those recovery days versus the fallback, like show up at the next circuit class of the gym or throw down the next Metcon. And really, you know, as you know, if you pay attention to your Garmin data or anything else, the readiness or the strain score tends to predict onset of illness or injury, typically about 2 to 3 days in advance. And so many people have that happen over and over again, that vicious cycle. And all you really need is, like, you know, depending on your age, 2 to 3 days a week, where you just pull up your parasympathetic menu and that's the plan for the day. So for me, what I do is I just plan it all out on Sunday night. So Sunday night, I write out what I'm going to do for the week, make sure I have certain recovery days built in. Sometimes I'm feeling super fresh and great on a recovery day, so I flip-flop it. I'll do a training session that day and then move the recovery day to the next day. So you stay somewhat dynamic. But I think the important thing is knowing that you can stay sane and also improve your body and brain, and it doesn't have to include a certain hard exercise session.
Yeah, exactly. And if you permit, I just wanted to make that comment. So, you know, if you remember, I talked about how not very many Indians are actually active. I think one of the reasons for it is because there is this like almost binary sort of position you need to be in. Either like you're sedentary and just, you know, sitting on your backside, or like you're like this, you know, guy who's killing it in the gym. I think the middle path, Buddha's path, if you will, is perhaps a better way to sort of approach this.
Yeah, it's not going to make for many sexy social media pics for the, you know, the average person, like, yo, I walked and I ate one fewer piece of cheesecake today. But it's an important note, because I think especially in our day and age of social media, people think you have to identify as a biohacker, as a fitness enthusiast or something like that. And I learned this, I was surprised a few months ago. The number one reason that people quit going to the gym is not because of lack of motivation or not wanting to go show up or an injury. It's because they don't know what to do when they get there.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times it's because, you know, you think you don't know what to do because you don't identify with, you know, the personal trainer or the fitness enthusiast who's got like 30 exercises memorized. But big part of it, I think, is, you know, just using either an app or website or a program that shows you what to do. And once you know that, I mean, that's really the first step. So, this has been super interesting, Ritesh. The book, by the way, it's called I tore my shelf behind me, behind this green screen. It's called The Amazing Health Transformation.
Yes, it is.
Cool. Well, I'm going to link to that. And then anything else interesting that you're up to that you want to share with people before I let you go here?
No, so I think what I'm really super excited to be working on right now are these retreats that I want to sort of build. And obviously, you're one of those people I want to sort of have participate in the retreat. I know I saw you doing something in Switzerland. I think India needs something like that. Maybe a blend of neuroscience, a little bit of like the biohacking that you bring to the table. Perhaps even like this habit formation, like how do you build better habits? A little bit about nutrition. Something like that is what I'm really excited to be doing right now. And I hope to unveil that in the next 1 year.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, I take part in probably at least 4 events like that each year. Like this upcoming one at Six Senses, right? It's you wake up in the morning and it's breath work and a cold plunge or some sauna, breakfast together, a hike, a meditation session, lunch, afternoon siesta, later afternoon workout together, dinner time Q&A, some type of meditation or breath work session post dinner to enhance sleep. And, you know, the trick is when you show up, if you stay there for something like 5 days, you leave with this new set of habits and tools that you kind of were wondering beforehand if you were doing properly. And then once you've done it with a whole bunch of people for 5 days, and that's the most important part, right? It's not what happens during the 5 days at the retreat. It's what you take home with you.
Exactly. And if you can build a small community, like micro tribe, if you will, around that, like that could keep you sort of on the clock after, I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, accountability groups or, Facebook groups, et cetera, afterwards for people to keep in touch. For me, it's usually WhatsApp groups with people that I develop while I'm on the trip. So I've got probably 12 different WhatsApp groups from people who have just been in different places with me around the world who continually bounce things off of each other. So, and of course, my notifications on WhatsApp are off because of that. So, anyways, I'm gonna pull the show notes at bengreenfieldlife.com/Ritesh, RITESH. You can grab his book. I'll put links to Breathe Again, the Breathe Again app, Ritesh's favorite song, if he remembers to send that over to me later on. And you can also leave your questions, your comments, and your feedback for Ritesh and I. And if he winds up doing a retreat, of course, I'll announce that on my social media. And you guys can maybe go over to India and enjoy some healthy living over there and hopefully get a chance to try some of this bologna ghee and maybe even this 5 p.m. snack, which is incredible. Ritesh, thank you so much, man.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, go get some sleep, man. Until next time, I'm Ben Greenfield along with Ritesh Bhairi signing out from BenGreenfieldLife.com. Have an amazing week.
Do you want free access to comprehensive show notes, my weekly roundup newsletter, cutting-edge research and articles, top recommendations from me for everything that you need to hack your life, and a whole lot more? Check out BenGreenfieldLife.com. It's all there. BenGreenfieldLife.com. See you over there. Most of you who listen don't subscribe, like, or rate this show. If you're one of those people who do, then huge thank you. But here's why it's important to subscribe, like, and or rate this show. If you do that, that means we get more eyeballs, we get higher rankings, and the bigger the Ben Greenfield Life Show gets, the bigger and better the guests get, and the better the content I'm able to deliver to you. So hit subscribe, leave a ranking, leave a review if you got a little extra time. It means way more than you might think. Thank you so much. In compliance with the FTC guidelines, please assume the following about links and posts on this site. Most of the links going to products are often affiliate links, of which I receive a small commission from sales of certain items, but the price is the same for you, and sometimes I even get to share a unique and somewhat significant discount with you. In some cases, I might also be an investor in a company I mention. I'm the founder, for example, of Keon LLC, the makers of Keon-branded supplements and products, which I talk about quite a bit. Regardless of the relationship, if I post or talk about an affiliate link to a product, it is indeed something I personally use, support, and with full authenticity and transparency, recommend in good conscience. I personally vet each and every product that I talk about. My first priority is providing valuable information and resources to you that help you positively optimize your mind, body, and spirit. And I'll only ever link to products or resources, affiliate or otherwise, that fit within this purpose. So there's your fancy legal disclaimer.